Hello and welcome to Reflex Point, your weekly podcast where we review and discuss the series Robotech one episode at a time. We're your hosts, Major Medina.
And I'm Paul Marquez.
And this week we're talking episode 6, Blitzkrieg.
Nice. This was a good one.
Oh, absolutely. Not to spoil it, but Blitzkrieg appeared on American television on March 11th, 1985, and the synopsis reads, "The SDF-1 crew rebuilds Macross City once more to take the transformation into account. Rick takes up Roy's advice and joins the Robotech Defense Force, which plans to break through the Zentradi blockade at Saturn's rings."
Exciting.
Oh, what an episode. All right. So, immediately we learned from the narrator, Mr. J.J. Smith, 2 months have passed.
Right. That's exactly the notes I have. 2 months later.
And the damage to Macross City has been repaired. They give a couple of shots of the city. It looks beautiful. Looks immaculate. Then we go over to Rick Hunter training, and we get the Rick Hunter theme. I love the theme.
Yeah, right? Okay. It's some action theme. Good. Yeah, love it too.
Yeah, it's fun. So we see Rick training, doing some parkour. In fact, we see him taking I did a little bit of calculation here. He would have to be at least 17 feet up in the air to do that double flip.
Okay, I have 20 feet because it looks like it's about the height of a high dive, right?
Like a high dive, like an Olympic high dive is 33 feet.
Okay, so it couldn't be that high, right?
That's what I was thinking. But I'll give you the 20 feet because he jumps, kind of sails in the air for a second, and then does a double flip. I can't imagine this is really part of the Robotech Defense Force training just because of the high risk that's involved. Somebody jumping off a two-story building and doing two flips.
So that was pretty funny. The narrator is talking about, though, how he's training for the elite Robotech Defense Force.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's why it's trying to show that this is what these guys can do. The only thing I can think of is maybe on the ship, gravity isn't quite what it is on Earth.
I'm with you on it's my headcanon exactly. It's like, okay, maybe they're at half gravity. It was a high platform that guy is just straight up jumping off of. How do you train
right,
that?
Right. Let's just say that the gravity, you know, isn't quite the same. And now, don't you think too, like if that's something you can pull off, you would feel like you're the shit once you do it in front of the rest of your training. Like your sergeant is like, wow. Or your trainer is like, this guy, great.
Yeah, this guy's only been training for 2 months.
But he did win the amateur contest, you know.
8 times.
Yes. However, he was wearing a tank top. He did not have the neckerchief of awesomeness at this point.
You can't have a neckerchief. It's not standard issue, buddy.
Well, what you didn't know is he made a thong out of it, and he's wearing it under those pants.
Oh, man. So when he's crawling on the ground, lots of grass on there. Again, like from the last episode, we did see grass and trees and all that. I'm assuming this is just from the debris of Macross Island being included in the fold.
The original SDF-1 crew was expected to probably be in deep space for extended period of time, right?
Yeah.
So they had to probably find some way to bring a little bit of that with them. I mean, even just to have a piece of Earth with them there, you know, a piece of their home planet, something they recognize.
Yeah, I hear you, but there's metal, and then there's got to be some kind of substrate.
How's the grass growing? Maybe that's just AstroTurf, man.
Some kind of, okay, it's AstroTurf. That would make a hell of a lot more sense, right?
That's probably what that is, especially if you're going to be training on it over and over again. Because a baseball field, you know, you play on that long enough, you're going to kill the grass.
So, we cut to Rick shopping with Min Mei. Now, in this scene, Min Mei's trying to take the groceries from Rick. And what I'm assuming is this is one of his first times out of training that he's able to hang out with Min Mei. But here's one question. So, they have a bag full of food and sundries. What are they using for money at this point?
I don't know. That you're right. That poses a good question.
Just to go back to that beginning when they said, life is back to normal. They show that the city's been rebuilt, that there's cars on the street, and then they do this kind of pan upwards and they show this, I don't know, is it some kind of power system or some kind of electronic thing hanging from the ceiling? What do you think that thing was?
You saw that too, right? That big ass like chandelier thing on the ship ceiling?
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, okay? In the books, there is talk of like hologram systems aboard the ship that it gives you the illusion of day and night and breezes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I would say that that's probably what it is.
Okay. I can buy that because it did look imposing, you know, like maybe it was big. It felt like Big Brother to a certain extent because it has these what look like cameras, you know, like the kind of cameras they hide in the ceilings in Las Vegas, you know.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it felt like the watchful eye of Big Brother, and it was in a good stark contrast to the city below. So it's a good shot overall. I enjoy the shot, and it really does bring you back to like, oh, right, you're on a ship.
Right, and it probably has to be turned off from time to time, so...
In fact, we could probably say like climate control, right?
Yeah.
You know, air conditioning, heating.
Filtering.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Filtering. Wow. And probably some cameras in there. So everybody has those who need to have an eye on what's going on in the city.
And then, you know, Macross Island itself was already a city established on a military base. So they probably have a certain degree of discipline already, you know, even the civilians. So when it came down to like, okay, we're going to issue credits and we're going to do this and try to make life as normal as possible, everybody probably went along with it relatively well.
Yeah. Macross Island is a laid-back city, you know what I mean?
It's got to be, right?
Those people are laid back. Maybe they get some kind of stipend. So they're shopping, they stop by a store, Minmay wants to go in. So from the outside, it looks like an Anthropology that has women's clothing.
Of all kinds.
Right, what's the reluctance for Rick?
Look at when Minmay's aunt and uncle opened up their restaurant, all of a sudden soldiers are showing up. You know, you just opened up the restaurant, you know, like people are learning about the shit right away with these businesses apparently, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this business opens up and everyone starts to talk about, oh, dude, this place opened up and they're selling teddies and lingerie. And that shit spreads across the ship crazily, you know? So he knew, he probably knew, like, what was in there in addition to just women's clothes.
Yeah, but okay, he's 19. It would be difficult to go into a store with a mannequin dressed in lingerie, as we see in the shot.
You know, Rick's waiting for Minmay. She goes to the dressing room to try on her dress, right?
Yeah.
And so Rick's waiting there. I think he's picking up some items from a bag that he dropped when the bridge crew, minus Vanessa, walk in and then they catch him, right? And they don't appear to know who he is. And then Lisa kind of looks at him and then says, "We'll come back later." So imagine, like, you're with these girls. You're looking at some lingerie. You see some guy, and he, for whatever reason, he kind of creeps you out. So then you tell the store person, "Okay, we'll be back later."
Right.
But they don't recognize him. But they're just like, you know, nah. But you know, as they walked away, they talked some shit about this guy in the lingerie section.
Well, he's not just a guy. He's in uniform. So that would be my tip off. Like, oh no, I work with this guy. I better get out of here.
But that seems to escape them. To me, it seemed like they were just like, there's some dude here. He gives me the heebie-jeebies. We'll be back.
So it's Rick in particular, not just the fact that there's some guy in lingerie. It's this guy in particular gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Right, but they don't, she doesn't realize it's Rick yet.
Oh, that's funny. To hear the conversation, yeah, kind of get it. And then. Couple of scenes later when they run into each other again, you know, they're calling him Mr. Lingerie.
Yes, they've already developed a nickname for that.
Ah, that's what they were talking about when they left.
Yes. And then doesn't someone whisper to Vanessa at that point? Vanessa missed all the action, but they've been talking about him. Remember, and she had to have said, that's the guy we're telling you about. And she goes, oh my goodness, you know.
Well, I imagine, like, you know, you're looking at intimate wear, and then some guy comes up from the floor, and they're like, right, oh shit, right. You were hiding from us. Mr. Lingerie over here. Look at him.
All right. So the whole little scene plays out. Then Min Mei's a little bit upset because, what, like, Rick doesn't appear to notice, right? The dress, because he's just gone through all this.
Right, right. He's distracted.
Right. So it jumps over, and now we're with Dr. Lang, right, explaining to Global some phenomena that's going on, right?
So Global walks into a room where there's just, I don't know how to describe it. Is it electricity? Is it, they refer to it as some kind of reaction, but there's this electrical hum going on. The whole time I'm watching it, you know, the sparkling is going on all around them. And I'm like, get the fuck out of that room. Why are you just standing around looking at this thing?
I have to imagine they've done tests by now. But imagine, you know, there's a phenomenon going on with this energy that seems to be, for whatever reason, contained in this one area. Like, why hasn't it escaped?
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't appear to be coming from any of the conduit. Like, they're just standing in a room where there's live wires. I mean, if Lang is comfortable just standing around, no wonder people think that's why his eyes look like that.
Right. I bet you Lang was the first to walk right in there to check it out. Number one, his mind thinks like that. Like, he had to figure out, what is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I can buy that.
And he walked right in, and then everyone was like, oh, fuck, he didn't die. Okay, well.
Because there's a lot of other workers there, too. You know, they're in the orange jumpsuits. So they look like kind of the grunts of the Robotech Defense Force Corps of Engineers.
Yeah, but think about working with someone as brilliant as Lang. And, you know, the first thing he wants to do is dive in and figure out either A, what this is, or B, what can this be used for? And his whole team is like, yeah, let's figure it out.
That seems crazy. I'm not saying it's like a plot hole or anything like that. It's not crazy from that aspect. It's just that he immediately goes to, hey, I think we can use this as a barrier on the ship.
Right. Whatever it is that he can calculate, the first thing is, I think we can use this for a protection kind of system.
Yeah. And man, to have somebody like that on your crew, that's the way to go. And Global is like, great. Yeah. Let me know. I want a full report.
So then we jump over to the Zentradi replaying the transformation.
Yes.
So think about that. The Zentradi have never seen anything like this. The ship transformed. And they are trying to study it, maybe too hard.
Yeah, it is interesting. Does the SDF-1 configurations have any names? Like, when it changes, do we designate it as Battaloid or...
Man, I think there is, but it escapes me right now.
I couldn't find it.
I want to say, you know, they call it ship mode is one, and I can't think of the other one right now. But I could be wrong. For the SDF-1, I don't even know if they even call it one or the other.
If the Zentradi, you're looking at it going like, what is this? Maybe there wasn't.
Yeah.
Yep. Which means it was just pure happenstance that when it changed configuration that it went into a humanoid figure.
Right, right. Which, it's a stretch, but however it happened, just imagine the Zentradi looking at it going, what in the hell just happened?
I didn't even think of that as a subtext, and that's a good point. This isn't something that they've seen Zor ship do before.
And I want to say Exidor is even telling Britai, like, this configuration even makes like aerodynamics of a certain sort completely nil because it makes no sense at all.
Well, that makes a lot more sense, their whole conversation of if that's the fact. They've never seen this configuration before, but you have to imagine because of surface area, their speed's going to be reduced as well.
Yeah, yeah, everything about it. And all it was is because we had to, the SDF-1 had to shift sections so that power could be harnessed to be able to use the main gun.
Paul, we're doing a podcast about Robotech, okay? We literally record something every week and then we put it out. You can go ahead and call it we.
Okay, I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're in this. You're in this with him, man.
Because I sure as damn well feel like it.
Yeah. That's obvious.
So the transformation confuses the hell out of the Zentradi.
Yeah, I love it. And I never really fully got it before. You see, I figured Zor's battleship was able to do this before. They're just wondering why they went into humanoid mode now and they haven't transformed back. Of course, they don't know that the space world system is gone, and that's why they did the transformation. But it makes sense from Global's point of view that they stay in that so that they can have access to the main gun.
Right, for the time being, yes.
Yeah, and they're approaching Saturn.
Okay, well, so first, Exidor tells Britai that if they get to the rings and then start to use ECM, that they won't be able to find them. And uh-huh. He says, like, well, go ahead and let's let them attempt their clever maneuver. And then he says, it will be like shooting a fish in a barrel, whatever that means.
I like it. I just don't know. Well, you know what? They've had 2 months to study human culture or Earth's culture.
Right. So you know they've got to be reading messages and
Mark Twain.
Whatever spy attempts they can, they're intercepting it. But he has to have some kind of knowledge of what that exactly means in order to be able to use it.
Some context.
So when he says whatever that means, that implies he doesn't understand. But I guess the main part is that he knows that whatever it means that something's easy. So right. Maybe that's why he says it, you know?
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Yeah, didn't think about it. I love it. So, some calculations. They're approaching Saturn. On average, the distance between Pluto and Saturn is 2,784,050,000 miles. We know they've been traveling for 2 months.
Right.
So they're going on average 1.9 million miles per hour to have gotten from Pluto to Saturn in 2 months.
That's pretty fast.
It makes you wonder how much faster they would have been if they had been in their ship mode. You know, I know there's no friction or wind resistance, but well, hold on. There's no friction or wind resistance. Does it matter what configuration you're in?
I wouldn't think that it does.
I wouldn't think so either, but I'm no rocket surgeon.
So let's say that they're not, that at this point, you know, those big engines, whatever configuration that they're in, they're still able to travel. I mean, that's pretty fast.
1.9 million miles per hour? Yeah, it's kind of fast. So here's a question for you. What is ECM?
Electronic countermeasures.
How the fuck do you know that?
Honestly, how do I know that?
Yeah, easy, because they don't say it.
Everybody knows that.
It was driving me crazy.
You didn't know
crazy.
What it was?
Everybody knows
You're
that.
You're lying.
I didn't know what it was. I did searches. Luckily, I watched the Japanese version that says the full thing, electronic countermeasures. That's what ECM is.
Yeah, maybe some people don't.
I knew what it was supposed to do, or they explained what the purpose of ECM was. And why use the acronym when you're not going to explain what it is?
Yeah, that definitely could leave some people in the dark. I'll tell you this. When I watched it as a kid, I had no idea what the fuck they were talking about.
Well, yeah. Lisa says, you know, we'll put on ECM and then they won't be able to see us. And Exidor has already explained that if they activate ECM, we right. won't be able to see them.
So fish in a barrel, right?
Yeah.
Then... later on, Rick runs into the girls with Roy.
Okay, before we get to that, in the original Japanese version, there's an extra scene here.
Lay it on me, brother.
Rick returns to the White Dragon with Minmay, and Uncle Max and Aunt Lena welcome him. Whoa, oh my gosh, it's Rick. And Minmay's like, hey, look, it's Rick. And he serves him some food and is like, oh, this is great. Look at you. And then Roy comes in and says, here's where you are. We're about to get orders. So you got to return to the barracks immediately. By the way, 5 cadets have been selected for the fighter squadron and you're one of them. And Min-Mei's super excited for him. Oh my gosh, you're part of Skull Squadron is what the context is there. Rick has that like, oh boy, great, thanks. And he leaves the restaurant before he even gets to eat one of the dumplings that Uncle Max had just served him. Then we switch over to the scene, which is pretty much the same of...
Well, down the line, that makes some of the scene make a lot more sense.
It does, right?
Yes.
It makes sense, or it explains why the hell he's in Skull Squadron.
Yes. Yes, that's
as
exactly...
a brand new cadet.
That's exactly what it was about. Yep. So...
Yeah.
He runs into the, you know, the bridge crew with Roy this time. And Roy's like, you know, oh, and one more thing. Attention, you know, and he's like, calls, oop. And he goes, oh, shit, because he knows. He knows who that is.
Yeah, so they run into Lisa, Sammy, Kim, and Vanessa at this point.
And that's when they whisper to Vanessa.
Yeah, and it's Sammy that calls him Mr. Lingerie, and it's Kim that gives Vanessa the backstory. And then, you know, Lisa recalls Rick as the civilian who called her Sourpuss. So we get a flashback.
We get that flashback, and then the girls start to whisper, right, that that's who he was?
Yes. Straight to his face, call him Mr. Lingerie.
And then I like how Lisa, like, she gets all... intellectual on him, you know. She's like, oh, and by the way, I don't know what your particular problem is, but it doesn't look very good for you to be showing up in women's lingerie shops.
Yeah. And I really do, now that I think about it, now that we've talked about it, I really do think it is just the fact that he was at the floor and then came up, you know.
Right.
Like, all right, that's shocking. That makes sense. Why they'd be like, oh, okay, we're going to leave now. That's a good one. And Sammy calls him a lecher.
Yes.
Man.
And can you imagine? Because that makes perfect sense. The youngest one stops, you know, and looks right at him. And then she's all, lecher.
The original Japanese version, she calls him a pervert.
Tomato, tomato.
All right, so then we go to the SDF-1 approaching Saturn.
And Global is starting to talk about his plans for a counterattack, right?
Yes. Well, Lisa says she's activated the ECM, then makes the clarification 12 minutes to not being able to be tracked.
Right.
And then Global starts explaining his plan.
Which is a blitzkrieg, right?
Yes. The thing that stood out to me is... Claudia's concerned, but she's understanding. Finally, she gets that, like, we're going to do what? Okay, yeah, no, I'll get everybody ready. Here's my thing with Claudia. I don't think she trusts Global.
She definitely has her differences with what Global keeps commanding.
Yeah, because later in the episode, when Lisa has a plan and she doesn't even explain it, Claudia's on board. Absolutely. Yeah, I will do exactly what you say.
But maybe it's just the language that Global uses, you know? Because, like, when he says blitzkrieg, it probably should have been named counterattack.
So, you know, it's a high-tense situation. He explains that they're going to do a blitzkrieg. He knows that this is going to cause casualties. So there's a lot of weight in him saying blitzkrieg, right?
Right, right.
And then he hits his goddamn head on the fucking door again. And the music tells you that that's a funny thing.
Right.
God. Like, on one hand, I like it because it's a repeating joke. On the other hand, we didn't need it right then. And then we get reaction shots from the crew. They're just kind of, huh? Mouth open.
Right. But nobody laughs, though. But everyone...
Nobody laughs. And that's... I don't know what to think of that.
No, because of the tension, man. Like, yeah, like, he just gave this order that they're like, wait, you know, like it's make it or break it right now. Like, we're really going to get past this and head toward Earth, or we're going to get destroyed. That's what they believe, you know?
Yeah.
And so imagine, he just said that, and then he turns around and bam, he fucking bangs his head.
But you know what? I like that they did the reaction shots, and I like that nobody was laughing about it.
Right.
Cut two. An officer telling the defense force that a counterattack will be performed and they'll get their orders tomorrow. Go ahead and see anybody you want to see tonight.
Yes. Which makes me believe that that's what they think is a suicide mission, right? So maybe they do have an idea of, or some kind of idea of what they're facing here. You know, that long-range sensors have picked up. There's a lot of ships out there.
Yeah. You have to figure they know some people aren't going to return, right?
I mean, even in a skirmish, there's going to be one or two people that don't return. But the way they're making it sound is like, all right, guys, we're going to do this. And if there's someone you want to talk to, you better do it today.
And the fact that that officer says it that way does support Rick's ennui about going and doing this battle. He didn't want to do it. I mean, he did it at the behest of Minmay, but only from the aspect of, I have to defend the people I love.
Right, right. I've got to defend her. Like, I think he justified it all by protecting her.
Yeah, yeah. I think he did see a bigger calling through her.
Okay, so after the announcement comes on, we go back. We're at Rick and Minmay. And they're kind of having a romantic scene, okay? It's nighttime. He's trying to tell Minmay, or he wants to tell Minmay how he feels, especially because he might not come back and he can't quite get the words out and she has no clue, man. To her, yeah. It never occurs that Rick might not come back, and that frustrates him even more. And there you have the classic reaction of two people where she can't tell him, I'm scared you're going to die, because what if he dies? And at the same time, like, he can't tell her, no, I could die.
Yeah, and I think this is where they did Minmay a disservice here. Because I don't think that reads on Minmay at all, because he's saying, I'm going to ship out tomorrow. She's happy. I'm so proud of you. And then she's only concerned that he didn't notice that she's wearing the dress she bought earlier.
Right, right.
And then she's looking for assurance after assurance that she's beautiful. And surprised to hear it. Like, oh no, you're beautiful. Really? You think I am? Here's another example of where the Japanese version wrote Minmay much better. When he suggests they take a picture, in the American version, she goes, oh, I'm not pretty enough for pictures. But in the Japanese version, she says, I don't look good in pictures. And I'm like, okay, even a beautiful person can take terrible pictures. Absolutely. And they know that about themselves.
Absolutely.
That's much more the Minmay that I want.
Right. Much more forgiving than no, I, yeah.
I yeah, agree. Because she looks like she's, you know, putting bait on a hook. You know what I mean? Like, hey, I'm not beautiful enough for a picture. What do you think, Rick Hunter? I was like, oh, no, you're beautiful enough. Oh, really? You really think so? Yes, you're really beautiful enough to take a picture.
Okay, and then she throws out that she has to go, right? Because Uncle Max gets mad when she stays out too late. With boys, yeah. She means.
Yeah. But okay, so let me ask you that question, because I've asked it kind of rhetorically a couple of times. What the hell is their relationship at this point? What do you think? What's your opinion?
I don't know. I think Rick is confused. He's been away for a while, you know, yeah. So their thoughts aren't on the same page. So what their relationship is, the only word that comes to mind is complicated. That's it. That's what the relationship is.
So do you think Minmay has feelings for Rick?
Yes.
Okay. To what extent? Because we know Rick is all in with Minmay at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's being telegraphed to us. And Minmay doesn't seem to be all in with Rick, because she's saying, when I'm out with boys. But she sure is having fun with him right now.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. She's so young. And sometimes when you're young, you think that making someone jealous is going to draw them closer to you.
Is she trying to do that, though? Or is she just unaware?
I don't know.
You know what? I don't think the writers knew either.
You know what? We've got to have a woman watch this and get their perspective from it.
Paul, that is a brilliant idea. If any of our listeners is a female, please write us at reflexpointpod@gmail.com. We will have you on the show. I want to hear your perspective. because that is an extremely good point.
You know, and it could come back that they'll say, no, this was written by males, you know, who clearly had no understanding of A, B, or C, or intentionally did it that way, you know. It brought a drama more known to American audiences.
That's a fair point.
That's how they dubbed it, you know?
Yeah, that's true. All right, so moving on.
Okay, so doesn't at this point Lang introduce what he's starting to call the pinpoint barrier system?
Yes, he is.
He says that he can't protect the full ship, right?
Right. They'll use the photon barriers to deflect lasers. And then we get classic Claudia.
What a joke, right?
That's pathetic. Like,
worse
than that's you're a joke. Right. Which tracks with her character. So I like it.
But don't you think, like, with Lang's part, like, think about the technology with it, right? So you've got this pinpoint barrier system. But with modern computer tracking devices, it could be a viable defense system.
In the schematic that Lang shows Global, you know, it's only 3 points that they're going to use to track around the entire ship. Which, I don't know if that's a division of energy. Here's this reaction we have. We can divide it up into at least 3 spots of a certain size and try to defend the SDF-1 as best as we possibly can.
And that's what I think. It's the size. They probably could have done more with smaller disks. Like, if you pause it and think to scale of the amount of the ship that one of those disks is covering, it's quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So we cut to Building 12, Rick's room. So Roy knocks on the door, opens the door, sees that Rick is awake, and tells him to go to sleep.
He says, you're just going to have to count fan jets or something.
So I want to talk about Rick's room real quick. Rick's room has a desk, a chair, the picture that he just took with Min-May. It has some books, what looks like a wall sconce above him that's providing the light. And then it has a TV, and I'm imagining it's a TV/telecom. So if this guy has to take a call, he has to jump up onto his bed and answer it. Hello? Which is another thing I wanted to talk about. So in episode 2, Spacefold, Lang calls Global on an old-style telephone.
Right.
But in this one, he's calling him on a
vid screen of some sort?
Absolutely. And I know he had to show him the schematic of the SDF-1 and the transformation that occurred and then the pinpoint barrier system. Did we ever see a traditional phone ever again in this? So something we'll watch for.
Right, right.
So Rick's trying to sleep. He keeps seeing that Zentradi soldier coming at him. Looks to the picture that he just took with him and Min-May. It's already in an acrylic frame. You know what that makes me think is that he took that picture and he immediately just went to a shop and bought a frame for it so he could put it up, which is sweet.
Yeah.
But he is seeing that very Zentradi soldier, which, you know, is a little bit of foreshadowing, but at the same time, it's like, hey, here's this traumatic event and you're going to have to go right back into it. That's brutal.
That's rough, yeah.
Cut to SDF-1, exterior shot. SDF-1 is in the rings of Saturn. Lisa's instructing pilots to their Veritex and stating that the operation will be directed towards the Cassini Quadrant. All right, so the Cassini Quadrant. A little bit of a tip of the hat to Jean-Dominique Cassini, who discovered 4 of the 82 moons of Saturn. But there is a narrow gap in Saturn's rings, and that's called the Cassini Division. And I think that's what they're referring to.
Wow.
They call it the Cassini Quadrant, which implies 4 sections.
But either way, I can forgive them for that.
Cassini, good on you, buddy. We got you in Robotech.
So we find out that Rick is VT-23 of Skull Squadron, right?
Yeah, how do we find that out?
Because he says, Rick Hunter, and then he goes, Rick Hunter, or VT-23. Remember, his voice squeaks for a while.
He cracks, man. It is one of my top 3 moments in Robotech for me. And they're launching from Prometheus.
Yes.
It's not important that I say that. It's just important to me that I know that.
Right. And you can tell by the front of the carrier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Lisa had told him before to report to Prometheus. So.
So he's doing his maneuvers, and he's wondering why other pilots are flying so dangerously. Then he does like a little loop, and then Lisa gets all up in his shit about it.
She sure does. Okay, so he's flying above the ice belt, and he sees all the other Veritex flying in the ice belt. The point being is they're trying to stay hidden. I think she's in the right here.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. But like, it kind of confused me, but you're right. He does fly above the rings, right? Yes.
Yeah, and then they go into the shadow zone. And
and you see like the blackness coming towards you. Imagine that, you know?
Well, they do a great job. All right, so so Rick sees the shadow zone coming up ahead, and it's like, oh, so that's what the shadow zone is. Then we see that he has to use his Veritech like vector panel to fly. He can't see anything in front of him.
Nope.
And oh man, I would watch 4 hours of an episode like The Long Wait to get to this battle scene. Glovo saying, once the enemy's in the ring, fire the main gun. And then we get these unbelievable visuals that I don't think we've ever seen in cartoons before up to this point. Him entering the shadow zone and the blasts like igniting the cockpit and the Veritech itself. And then we see the lights, you know, it goes black again, and we just see the lights on the tail and the front of the ship. It's mind-blowing visuals.
Yes. Yes, it totally brings you into just how dark it is.
I'm fanboying over this stuff so hard while I'm watching this.
I agree. I'm right there with you.
Cut to Zentradi Bridge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Britai is giving Captain Zerol some instructions to go to Saturn's rings and capture the SDF-1. Is he really giving him these instructions, or is he using Captain Zerol as a decoy?
Britai said, let's let them attempt their plan, right? And then we'll get them.
Yeah.
Right. So I believe that the Zentradi believe they've got the SDF-1 exactly where they want it. So yes, his mission is to go capture it, not that he's bait himself.
Okay. So then we see this great shot of the battle pods being launched. Boy, I like that.
Yeah.
As that ship approaches and gets into firing range, Global gives the command to fire the main gun.
And so battle pods start spewing forth, I think from a destroyer is what that particular ship was. So it looks like the SDF-1 dipped down and then came back up, right?
Yeah, from
the
rings. Yeah, yep.
And then...
a whole lot of nothing. We got an impotent SDF-1. Main gun won't fire. And they immediately get a call from Lang.
Mm-hmm.
And Lang's saying that the pinpoint barrier is causing issues with the main gun firing. And essentially, they can't use it.
And then Global mutters something in Russian. What was it?
He says, Buzhamoy.
Which is?
It's Russian for oh my god.
Which is perfect for like the main gun won't shoot.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we get a visual of the pinpoint barrier system in action.
Yes, missiles are approaching.
Yes, so it looks like the controllers look like the control for the old game Centipede.
Yeah, it absolutely does. But
and that's,
could you imagine playing that game, but it being life or death?
Yeah, wow.
And like not just your life, but about 11,000 plus 70,000, about 100,000 people's lives. And you got 3 people playing it. Those are some brutal odds, right?
Hey, you spin that ball as fast as you fucking can.
And they are doing their best. And then Lisa lets Global know that Blue and Green Squadron have been destroyed.
Completely wiped out.
Yeah. Skull Squadron's good, though. And then we get this beautiful shot of Global saying Skull Squadron's our last chance, which is, you know, on one hand, good. It's nice for the drama and all that. But Good God, blue and green squadrons have been destroyed, man. So I love this point in any show or movie. How are they going to get out of this one?
Right.
Because there has to be something. And if it's satisfying, it's great. If it's some bullshit Deus Ex Machina thing, I hate it. But in this case, we get Lisa.
Right. And she, the first thing she asks if those discs can be concentrated on the front of the Daedalus, right?
Yes. She gives a little bit of information. You go, well, I don't know. I still don't see how this is going to help. She instructs Kim and Sammy to put out the Destroids.
Yes, the Destroids.
They're going to put them out at the front of the Daedalus, or in the bay of the Daedalus. And then she tells Claudia to direct the fortress for a frontal attack. And Claudia just says yes. Again, I think she trusts Lisa, and she doesn't trust Global as much.
That's the only justification I can think of is that there's no time to think about it.
Yeah, yeah. So then we're going to cut over to Rick. Cool action shot of him getting kind of knocked out of the sky and having to go to Battaloid mode.
Right, right.
I think that's one of the first times we actually see that happen in that quick succession, you know? Him going from Fighter Guardian to Battaloid super quick.
Yeah, it was sharp. And he kind of rolls on the ship, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He rolls and then faces back up and starts shooting up at the sky and then falls into the...
Yeah, he backs up into an airlock.
Yeah, comes face to face with his Entradi warrior.
They kind of stare at each other for a while.
Yeah, they you know what? They stare at each other. Rick raises his gun. The touch I liked is that they did, not a close-up, but they did a close-up of his of the Entradi's face, and you see his eyes with fear in it. You know, they do that kind of like quiver in the
yes,
eye.
Yes.
Yeah. Fear in the eyes of the Entradi. That was beautiful, you know. And Rick hesitating, having to see the Entradi face to face, and
as opposed to shooting at Mecha, you know.
Right, and it might be that they are humanoid. It might have been a little bit easier had they not been, but I don't think so, based off of what happens later. The narrator basically saying that he couldn't shoot at another living being, but. You know, 50 feet tall or not, staring up at somebody and seeing that fear in their eyes.
Right. A humanoid face that you can recognize, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you looked, I mean, I know it's jumping a bit, but if you looked at an invid face, you'd never be able to recognize one way or the other what it's thinking.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It might have been a little bit easier, but man, seeing that fear in his eye, and because, you know, because it's a cartoon and because Rick's in a Veritech, they're equal size, so it is really, to our eyes, just looking at another human being,
right,
who is unarmed. What do you do?
You know, it's one thing to shoot at an enemy tank or an enemy truck,
yeah,
but at an enemy face.
You know, I did read something, and I don't know how accurate this is. When they were doing trench warfare, that 80% of the shots weren't intended to kill somebody.
I gotta believe that.
Yeah, and that's just because it is extremely difficult as a person to shoot at another person that you're staring at across a trench and intend to kill them. Even if they are trying to kill you, like the shots you're firing off are intended to keep them down in the trench and not poke their head up and try to shoot you.
Okay, so Rick, face-to-face with the enemy, kind of hesitates, but understandable. The enemy kind of hesitates too, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, the way I read it is that the enemy's frozen in fear. And that's what Rick registers. You know, there's a humanity to this Entradi warrior.
And the Entradi kind of makes a move, and then Rick raises his weapon, you know, like don't do it, buddy.
Right, right. And I don't know. I just think it's one of the best shots. And really tracks with the fight that Rick has been having this whole time about joining this war. I don't care how many times I've seen this episode. I'm always kind of on the edge of my seat wondering, is he going to shoot the Entradi? And arguing against it, like, don't shoot, Rick. Don't do it.
you know, if I was in a war with someone else, okay, and you're right, and I end up finding myself in the upper hand where I have this weapon of assured elimination and the other person doesn't.
Yeah.
And they give me this look of like, you got me. Like, could I pull the trigger? Like, it's one thing on even ground. We're shooting at each other. You shoot at me, you miss, and then I hit you. Mm-hmm. Well, that was on you, you know?
Right.
But if I came around and just found you, you know, I mean, for all we know, this Entrati was a cook on the ship. Right. So let's just say I came around the corner and found the cook of an enemy. I mean, would I shoot him for being a cook? No. But I don't know exactly. So face to face with someone, I think it would be so much harder.
I think it would be nearly impossible because the one thing I like that it shows is that at that point, Rick's not thinking about the defense of the people he loves. It speaks more to the fight that Rick is having with his own humanity. And that is, it's just beautiful to have.
Yeah, it makes for a great story.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back to the episode because, I don't know, it's a bit of a bummer. this scene is a bit of a bummer. There's no way around it. So, but we're about to get to Joy.
Right.
Even though this very Zentradi, who I'm rooting for at this point, we actually see incinerated, not moments later. Right. Okay, so we see Captain Zerl and his first officer tells Captain Zerl they're preparing to ram us. And Captain Zerl tells him to open fire. By the way, Captain Zerl, voiced by our director, Robert Barron.
Hmm.
So the SDF-1 starts taking heavy fire, and then we get this brilliant shot of Lisa. Just steely-eyed stare, right? And gives the command to ram the Daedalus into that Zentradi ship. And we get this beautiful shot. The Daedalus is protected.
The whole front is glowing.
Yeah. Yeah. With that pinpoint barrier. And just rams into that ship. We're just seeing metal and ship construction just get destroyed.
Yes.
Lays down into the bridge. The bays open, and then we see this beautiful shot of 5 Destroids, and they just open fire, and man, do we see a ton of brutal shots of the Zentradi getting blown up.
First, the missiles with all their, you know, the streaks behind them just choom. And
oh, man. After that shot, after the scene with Rick and the Zentradi, I'm feeling kind of bad about it. All of these Zentradi getting killed, too.
They're the bad guys.
You know what? Going back, I know, but you know what? Rick's humanity touched me, man. And then going back to the fact that the outside of the ship looked kind of organic, we see it bubbling up.
Yes. Like
there's some sort of disease inside of it. Yes. Like fast-acting disease.
But I love the way that happens. Those bubbles just go right down the ship, just boom, 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 boom.
I love it, too. It gives me the heebie-jeebies, like, in the most fantastic way. We see Rick escaping, barely, before the ship is destroyed. And that's it. That's save the day. We go back to the bridge. Claudia congratulates Lisa. Sammy saying, I'm going to be a real fan of yours, Lisa. We see Glovel giving a head nod that telegraphs to me like relief and pride in Lisa.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. Like he recognizes her command, you know. He's like, wow, yes. I've got a great second in command here.
Yeah, because that's what Glovel mm-hmm. would do, man. He wouldn't be upset that she saved the day and that he was ready to just call it, because he had said earlier, you know, so this is how it ends. Great on Lisa, good on Glovel. And then we get a shot of Britai back on the Zentradi bridge saying, perhaps it's time we call in reinforcements.
So then Rick starts to the narrator, I think, implies that Rick starts to reflect about the changes that have occurred within him.
Yeah.
And just exactly how different his life path has taken to what he thought it was going to be.
So I thought it was great. So Rick told Roy he couldn't fire at another living being. You know, that might be something that you try to hide from your commander. And I know him and Rick have a relationship, but I don't know. It seems like that might be something you want to hide if you are uncertain about your morals. This tells us that he's so certain about his morals that he felt comfortable telling Roy, hey, I couldn't fire on another living being. Roy's response is that experience will erase doubt, which is saying something without really saying anything.
Probably that it will make it easier. I don't think that Rick really fought for his morals as much as he told Roy, almost admitting a shortcoming, you know? Like they probably had to do some kind of debriefing somewhere along the line, because probably everything's recorded, you know, in these cockpits and whatever. And they were sure. Like, holy shit, you were on that ship? And he was like, yeah. And then, you know, whatever, you know, it happened, he probably told Roy before, Roy, I couldn't shoot at this guy. You know, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And Roy being, you know, having a little bit of humanity himself was probably like, I felt the same way when I was in the, what do we call it now, the global war?
Global war.
I think it says something to that effect.
And I think Rick had to make this logical jump or this logical conclusion that, hey, why is it so easy for me to fire on a battle pod where I know there's a Zentradi inside there, but I couldn't do it face to face? And the narrator makes the point that there's something changing inside of him. Because he was able to do one and wasn't able to do the other. And Roy kind of reassures him, don't worry about it. You'll be able to do the other in time. So to me, it's like, how does Rick feel about the fact that eventually he's going to have no hesitation in pulling that trigger?
Right. And he's probably like, I don't want to.
Yeah, I think Rick is like, I don't want to, but then is also like, I've been shooting at battle pods and people shooting at me easily, and that's something I never thought I would be able to do either. So I think the point is that Rick is nervous about what's changing inside him and what's going to eventually happen to him as a person. That's it. This was his first day on the job.
Right. Hey, day one. Welcome to the job.
Wow.
So what do you give this episode ranking?
Ah, what a great question. I give this episode, I have no issues with this episode. I'm giving it a 10.
A 10?
Yep, I'm giving it a 10. A
10.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love it. I love it. I think it's a great episode. The only fault I could possibly find with it is in a little bit of character development or character with Min Mei. Okay, there's maybe one other issue in the fact that Lang is able to turn a problem into a solution in near 30 minutes. No, that's fine. That's fine. And it may be a little bit of backlash from having to watch the long wait three times, but yeah, I'm giving it a 10. How about you?
I give it about an 8. You know, which is a high rating. It doesn't mean I didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I give it an 8. I think that there were some things that could have been explained just a little bit better. But, I mean, overall, it was a solid episode. And I wish we could have gotten a little bit more explanation of how Rick could jump from such a high point and not break his legs.
That's robotechnology right there.
Did I in no way not enjoy the episode? And I loved the Daedalus maneuver. You know, it set the precedence for a lot of other episodes that it was just a maneuver that worked, you know?
Here's something that may raise it for you. Lisa, what a character, right?
Yeah.
Like, finally we get enough Lisa to tell us that whether you like her or not, this gives you enough information to make an informed decision. And wow. I mean, to me, she is just, she's tops.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
So, I would never, my personal rating, 8, I would never try to argue someone else's rating of anything higher, because I could totally see where they would come with that. But I thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right, man. Who's your MVP?
MVP. It's got to be Lisa.
It's got to be Lisa. All right.
She single-handedly saved the ship.
All right. Well, here we are at the end of another episode. Paul, I want to thank you for joining me this week and giving me your thoughts. This was, I say it every week, but man, do I really mean it. This is the best part of my week.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. And if anyone has anything else to comment on, we reach us at the Rebotech forum. Where else can they reach us?
You can email us at reflexpointpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at reflexpointpod. You can find us on Instagram at reflexpointpod. Nope, didn't have any reason to say those. That's where you can find us.
Those ums, huh?
Yep.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Everyone, have a wonderful night.